I'm really into simple television these days. I used to watch intense television with really complicated plots and almost very stressful things happening to characters until my friend Kelly told me, no, we don't need to watch that kind of television, and tuned me into this show called Treetop Cat Rescue, where these people who are animal rescuers would rescue cats who got trapped in the very tallest of trees. Now, unfortunately, there are not very many seasons of Treetop Cat Rescue, so I had to turn to other shows that were just as enjoyable, not stressful, no traumatic, anything, and had a lot of seasons. So I found House Hunters, specifically International House Hunters. I never really cared for any of the pretend drama that they tried to have about the people picking whichever place that they were going to go. But I liked the show because I lived vicariously. I would be able to think about, okay, if I were to move to any of these international places and seeing the typical types of architecture and where people really live and how many bathrooms they can actually afford and what kind of view they have and where they're going to go to school, allowed me to live vicariously by watching these shows. And so I love the show for it. Just anytime, seems like there's thousands and thousands of episodes I can watch and think about, I wonder what it would be like if I actually moved to Hong Kong. Except that this show is a lie. They lie. House Hunters and International House Hunters, when they are filming the show, the people have already picked the location. They're just showing them two other places that they could have gone, but they didn't. I can't believe it. My show lied to me and betrayed me. And it's not even that I cared what place that they would choose. That wasn't why I watched the show. It just seemed like the principle of the thing. Or, you know, maybe it's that I'm using the word love when I talk about TV shows a little inappropriately. I'm using it in the most trite, sentimental, and least powerful sense of the word. Do I really love House Hunters International? I mean, I spent a lot of time with it, to be sure, but I'm not paying for it to go to college. I wouldn't go out of my way to watch it. I can't tell you the last time I watched it before I found out it was based on lies. The show definitely does not love me back. It doesn't even know I exist. Have I fallen into the trap of modern love, using the word when it doesn't really matter and avoiding it when it really does? Spending time on this show instead of spending time with my family and friends who do know I exist and support me? The thing is, before I realized International House Hunters was cheating on me, is that it was safe. I didn't expect it to love me back. Nothing dramatic or stressful is going on with the show. It's predictably available and has a boring plot that if I fall asleep watching it, nobody cares. I can't really say the same thing about the people that I love. If they were sharing a story with me and I fell asleep, that would be pretty rude. And people I love share stressful things with me. People are not predictable in general. And I just have to say that in my defense, it's not as if society taught me how to love well. Where in society do you learn about love? You have an imprint of it from the people who raised you. Society has a huge influence in shows and stories like Romeo and Juliet in Western culture. While schools nowadays are teaching more about emotional intelligence and executive skills, and while people raising you might teach you about the birds and the bees, no one sits you down and says, "This is how you love well." Somehow this great and grand emotion, the thing that's supposed to be under all things, is something that you're supposed to instantly understand when really most of us are just muddling through our relationships with those that we care about the most. Spirituality, however, does share a lot about the ideals of love and relationships with each other and partners as a community. When I think of the moral exemplars for relationships, the one that I think of the most is the founder of Islam, Muhammad, peace be upon him. Christianity, especially during the Crusades, would use the multiple marriages of the Prophet as a reason to slander Islam while ignoring their own horrible treatment of women. And it's true that he had more than one wife. However, His first marriage was to a woman who was 15 years older than him, and he was monogamous with her until the day she died. 6 of his 7 children were born by her. It seems that these later marriages were for political alliances or charity to the women rather than them being in a forced marriage or as a homage to polygamy. It's also important to know, I think, that all of the women, save for his first and possibly second marriage, were widows and had been married before. In his relationships, the prophet encouraged a balance that was revolutionary for its time and is still refreshing today. He encouraged that with your family, you should be your best, and not save all of your love for just the outside world, and lash out at those who care the most for you. He told his followers that they were only as good as they were to their families. Imagine if every petty thing you did to your partner was known by everyone on the newspaper. That's what he said about relationships. He talked about relationships through the metaphors of equality. For example, that each partner serves as clothing for the other partner. Now think about that. Think about clothing as a covering that we hide what you think to be the most shameful parts of you from everyone else, but that you cannot use that cover to abuse the partner behind it. He said things like, treating your own kin with the same kindness they treat you does not count in protecting and looking out for them. The person who truly protects and looks out for his kin is the one that keeps benefiting them even when they break their relations with him. End quote. Think about the amount of restoration and restorative justice that can happen in a family with an attitude like that. He was even proud to do the chores in the house that was typically reserved for women, something that relationships still struggle with today, as many women in heterosexual relationships report working a second shift when they come home from work and then have to do the work of raising a family, whereas a lot of men come home from work and are somehow obliged to relax. This is some advice about from one religion about how to have a good relationship, but I find that my faith of Unitarian Universalism has plenty to say about relationships as well. Since the 90s, abstinence-only sex education has been the status quo, while mainstream media becomes more sexual and often regressive about romantic love. We pioneered a sex education, that is, the Unitarian Universalists did, along with the United Church of Christ, that was so good, Planned Parenthood uses it today. A snippet review of this program says that my religious tradition affirms sexuality as a sacred gift. We need to provide our people with age-appropriate, medically accurate information about sexuality and sexual health. We must not let our negligence and their ignorance continue to harm people and communities. End quote. This includes a progressive understanding on the spectrum of gender differences such as transgender, cisgender, non-binary, and agender presentations, as well as sexual orientations that are ever expanding beyond the 4 letters of gay, lesbian, trans, and transgender to queer, questioning, asexual, pansexual, polyamorous, and many more. Because the truth is that people love each other, and consenting adults have a hard time navigating all of this without some sort of guidance that has been thought through by the top ethicists and health specialists who consider what it means to be enthusiastically consenting and building harmonious relationships. And we also know that love goes far beyond the love that we create in our households. Love as a force can build up the common good and ought to be given to everyone if we can train our hearts to handle it. This, too, is an ancient spiritual concept. For example, at many Christian weddings, you've probably heard this passage from Corinthians 13, 4 through 7. Love is patient, love is kind. It does not envy, it does not boast, it is not proud. It does not dishonor others, it is not self-seeking, it is not easily angered, it keeps no record of the wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. End quote. This passage, however, is so much more than an idealistic expression for people who are getting married. This passage was intended for entire communities and society. Listen to the whole chapter 13 and see if it changes your mind about the context of that particular passage. If I speak in the tongues of men or angels but do not have love, I am only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. If I have the gift of prophecy and can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have a faith that can move mountains but do not have love, I am nothing. If I give all I possess to the poor and give over my body to hardship that I may boast, but I do not have love, I gain nothing. Love is patient. Love is kind. It does not envy. It does not boast. It is not proud. It does not dishonor others. It is not self-seeking. It is not easily angered. It keeps no record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. Love never fails, but where there are prophecies, they will cease. Where there are tongues, they will be stilled. Where there is knowledge, it will pass away. For we know in part, and we prophesy in part, but when completeness comes, what is in part disappears. When I was a child, I talked like a child, I thought like a child, I reasoned like a child. And when I became an adult, I put the ways of childhood behind me. For now, we only see a reflection as in a mirror, then we shall see face to face. Now I know in part, then I shall know fully, even as I am fully known. And now these three remain, faith, hope, and love. But the greatest of these is love. End quote. If you read the whole thing, it becomes a humanist manifesto for how people ought to treat each other, no matter the type of relationship they are in with each other. It doesn't refer to God very much, but how people are to be in love with each other and how they can only reach a complete knowing of themselves and each other through love. That we shall know as we are fully known to one another in a never-ending journey of spiritual discovery through love. If you back up even further, this chapter is sandwiched between two chapters about how to build up community. Chapter 12 is about the unity of the community and how each of us have a part to play as each of our parts of our body make up the whole. And chapter 14 is about how to worship. And this is part of the New Testament that Paul wrote to communities who are trying to figure out a new way to divine the sacred and be together in community after leaving old ways that were no longer spiritually fulfilling to them. In this way, chapter 13 is an important lesson about what heaven can look like, a place where we can know and be known through a process of loving, and when we are disappointed, can turn to love again. Because this is the truth about love, is that it has been cheapened away from its truly powerful force and connective tissue of all we are and all we are meant to be. That we ought not to use it for things like TV shows and t-shirts, but really think about, how do I love well? And think about that who we are in love is a much of part of us as who we are publicly to everyone else. That the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, said that who we are to the people we love the most is more who we are, even if it's an intimate part that not a lot of people see. We should not let that secrecy keep us from being good, loving people. We should not say, oh, well, I was angry, you make me so angry, and use that as an excuse to be truly awful people to our partners. That instead we should understand that we cover each other in a mutual relationship. I feel incredibly loved when I feel covered by my spouse. And I mean that in intimate ways, but I also mean that when my husband remembers to pick up the kids for me when I forgot, or was there for me in the hospital, or when I was able to help his in-laws while he was at work. These are the ways that we cover each other in a spirit of mutuality. And with my community, I try to live out Corinthians 13 as best as I can, because that is the only way that I can truly ever be known. And this is the truth about love.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.